I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Upon the examination of the galaxies of space, images begin to appear. Images of strange and powerful forces. But of all the forces in the universe, the two most powerful, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, prepare to explode. Champion versus champion, title for title. It's the ultimate challenge. It's WrestleMania.
Follow that, huh? Welcome again to Parts Unknown, the WrestleMania retrospective that takes you back to the halcyon days of the greatest show on earth. This week we're in 1990, WrestleMania 6 at the Sky Dome in Toronto. The first time the Fed had held its annual extravaganza outside the US of A. A young Edge was in the 11th row watching on as the irresistible force met the immovable object in the main event. It was a whopper of a card with 14 matches in all. It lasted just over 3.5 hours and took place before more than 65,000 fans with Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura on commentary. Here to separate the big pops from the cheap shots are my very own personal colossal connection. First, after a three-week sabbatical, he's back, and better than ever, possibly. Mm. From Sky Sports News, it's the African Dream, Anton Tolui.
Hello there.
Next, it's the author, the doctor, the main eventer, the genius, Carrie Dunn.
Hello.
And last, but by no means least, if you haven't read an article of his on something this year, you're doing the internet all wrong. He's just a common man. It's Carl Anker.
Hello there.
Anyway, on with the show. There's only one place we can start. The Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan to become WWF champion in a title versus title match. That rarest of things, a babyface versus babyface match between the two biggest stars in the company at this point. We got a recap package rather than a hype vid, which they hadn't mastered at this time. Included Tony Schiavone calling the Royal Rumble, which I got a kick out of. Who'd like to tell us how this match came about?
So at the Royal Rumble, there was a moment where Hogan and Ultimate Warrior were on different sides of the ring, back to back, brushed shoulders against each other, turned round, realised who each other were. And in the true amazing WWE tradition of, oh wait, those characters have never ever been in the same universe together, the crowd slowly realises what's happening. And then you hear one of the biggest pops in Royal Rumble history. I'd say it's the biggest pre-internet pop in Rumble history. The biggest post is Austin in 2001. I maintain that. And it was the real, like, oh, wow. Yeah, let's get those two fighting together and whatnot. Hogan would go on to win the Rumble. Somewhere or other wins the belt in between. And then you get this quite fun Rumble to WrestleMania period where Hogan is running on Warrior matches to protect the Ultimate Warrior, and Warrior is running on Hogan matches to protect Hogan, in the true sort of, we need to make sure that when we both arrive at WrestleMania, we're in peak condition. There was a similar thing going on this year, in 2018 with Nakamura and AJ Styles. And also during this time, they're both dropping just off the wall promos. Truly bizarre. I have no idea what's being said. There's a really famous one, infamous one from The Ultimate Warrior, where he's describing Hulk Hogan in a plane going to WrestleMania, going to this ultimate challenge, and then the plane starts crashing. And I don't know exactly what is being said because I don't know what he's trying to say. I just remember there's a bit where there are two parachutes left and Hulk Hogan has a choice. And Ultimate Warrior goes, take the plane. Send it into a nosedive. Do it, Hulk Hogan. Do it. And I was in true Ultimate Warrior style, I have no idea what you're saying, but okay, yeah, yeah. Yay, hooray. That's fight. Famously, this match was practiced behind closed doors for 3 weeks before it happened because Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan are both notoriously botch prone. And even after 3 weeks of practicing, there is still one flub partway through this match.
Carrie, in terms of the match, it's pretty basic. You might say tedious, but the crowd is so white hot for it that it echoes of Mania 18 with Rock and Hogan that almost renders the in-ring action
immaterial to a
point. Yeah, and the match isn't about the match, is it? It's not about what is actually happening. And yeah, it's quite funny to kind of think about them practicing this because, you know, what the hell were they practicing for that long? What would take them that long? It's a very, very basic match. You've got your ref bump in the middle of it, which is kind of, you know, typical WWE, WWF. But yeah, the crowd reaction is just, you know, it's off the scale. And it doesn't matter what is happening in the ring because, again, it's the story that's being told by these two performers. I'm not using the word wrestler there. that's what's important here, and that's what gets the reaction.
In terms of the end, Anton, so Warrior wins, but Hogan, in that Hogan way, makes sure that the spotlight isn't on him at the end.
Well, for starters, Hogan barely gives him a three count. I mean, it is. You watch it back, like, did he? I think he did win. Warrior did win.
But that's all right, isn't it? Like, more matches should have that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
He's not doing it for real, is he?
No, but obviously. It's just because it's Hulk, isn't it? And that's where you just... Of course, it's, you know, 3.1 count, as opposed to, you know, actual, you know, things we see week in, week out. And yeah, obviously, you know, Hogan's there, drops his knee, points to the sky and gives him the bow. And, you know, it's a coronation, basically, isn't it, effectively? Well done, mate, you've done it. I mean, it's the ending of the match is good because there are the twists and you're not sure who's going to win because of the, you know, the kick out and Hulk does the you and you're like, okay, here we go. Similar ending to what we had last year. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, great. And, you know, it took a long time to get to it, but the ending's fun. The ending's great. And the crowd get the ending they deserve, not just a sort of, Here's what you see week in, week out, and a leg drop and done. At least it was something a bit different. And yeah, I mean, this is not, in my opinion, a great WrestleMania, but at least the big main event had a decent finish.
So it's a guilty pleasure?
No. It's just I can appreciate the hard work and the storytelling that goes into the end of the match. I can, you know, Pat Patterson clearly worked his ass off to get these guys ready to tell that story at the end of the match. And you got an iconic moment at the end. And I think it's really easy for us to go back and say, oh, you know, it wasn't a great match. But these two guys were hugely popular at the time and the crowd loved it. And I think you've got to say, yeah, well, personally, I'll take my hats off to it and say, well, at least they delivered and the fans went home happy.
Carl, have you got a theory as to why Warrior was something of a flop as champ? Because you could say it's because he's not a very good wrestler, but you could apply that to Hogan as well. Is it because he just didn't care enough about it?
It's because he's not a good actor, very specifically. So we have all said various bad things about Hulk Hogan. But the thing is, when Hulk Hogan wants to tell a story about himself, I'm crucially saying that, when Hulk Hogan wants to tell a story about himself and wants to make himself look good, he will deliver. So there's a point in this match where his knee gives way and Gorilla's going, oh, I'm not sure, blah, blah. And Hogan eventually powers up and goes through and Gorilla hand waves and says there's something about his platellas snap back into place. But Hogan can sell in that way. When Hogan wants to look like he's really hurt and vulnerable, and actually it takes energy for him to get up to this hulking up bit. Because the hulk up is ridiculous. It's just no sell, right? But he has to go through a lot of damage and a lot of pain to get there. And Hogan is great at doing that. Hogan's great at just going, oh no, I'm really weak. Please don't, please don't, please don't. Hello. Whereas Ultimate Warrior never does that. We joked on WrestleMania 13 about how he just stood right back up after a pedigree. And he does that all the time, where he shows no respect for his opponent. He never wants to make himself look vulnerable. So as a champion, there is no intrigue in anything he does, because you just assume he's going to win. And if he loses, you assume he loses via shenanigans, because he doesn't know how to make himself look vulnerable.
So that was the main event. Certainly not a five-star classic, but historically significant. The next match I want to talk about, Bad News Brown versus Roddy Piper, ended in a double count-out carry. Uh-oh. Just when I thought I was all in on Piper, as we spoke about over the last couple of shows, the blackface stuff.
Oh, my God. I literally didn't even realise what was happening. So until you kind of see the pre-match stuff. And I've written in my notes, why is Roddy painted? Then I've wrote, oh my God, it's because this whole thing is racist. And the words that he uses, it's not just the blackface that goes with it. He talks about Bad News Brown's physical appearance too. He goes with all the kind of, you know, the stereotypes, awful stereotypes, kind of talks about bug eyes, talks about his ears, his nose, his nostrils. It's just the most egregious racism. And yeah, it's terrible. I was shocked.
Are you still a fan of his?
It's a really difficult thing, isn't it? I mean, we say kind of you can't just look at things as being of their time. And obviously this is a product of its time. Roddy Piper is a character that's been written and is being performed by this particular performer within a particular culture. You know, it's not to say that WWE isn't free from this kind of stuff now. We still see racial stereotypes being wheeled out. And although they're perhaps slightly more subtle now, they're not quite as explicit as this, there are still problems with the way WWE portray their characters. So, yeah, I mean, I'm still a fan of Roddy Piper's work, but I'm certainly not a fan of this or the way this was produced.
What shocked me about it, Carl, apart from the fact that he blacked up half of his face and body, was that the crowd seemed to eat it up. They didn't care at all. They thought it was a hoot.
Oh, yeah. They love it. They WWE fans also love when Triple H blacked up and impersonated The Rock during DX versus Nation of Domination. I'd say wider society still has not grappled with, if you pardon the pun, or understood why blackface is offensive, unacceptable. The interesting thing about this match is, like we mentioned previously when Piper was against Goldust, is that Piper looks unique and Piper has this different energy compared to everyone else. So this match is a fight. Compared to all the punch-kick, Irish whip stuff, this is just two lads having a scrap. Which is interesting to watch and is a varied pace. And if Piper hadn't have blacked up, yeah, probably would enjoy this. This is quite a nice Backstreet Brawl-type thing. Why he blacked up? I think he was asked later on in life why he did it. And he said something along the lines of, listen, I'm from this place. There are barely any black people in this place. Which makes zero sense.
He also said, I said some nice things about Michael Jackson in the build-up as well.
I was going to ask, what was his thing with Michael Jackson? The little tee-hees and the little, every so often. And it was all very odd, wasn't it? It was, why is he bringing...
Why has he got a glove?
Yeah, why has he got a glove? And he puts it on during the match as well, doesn't he? It's really uncomfortable. And if you can't explain why you did it, that doesn't mean it's okay.
No.
That's what I don't understand. And you can say, I admit, or I can appreciate why it was wrong, or like I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that you should be able to be reflective and say times have changed and I was off the mark. I'm pretty sure if you asked half the crowd who were there now and said, oh, what about this? They'd be like, oh, yeah, actually, and watching it now, I'd feel a bit uncomfortable. But at the time they lapped it up, fine. You're not going to turn around to that person and say, you're an awful human being. You're going to say, oh, well done. Thanks for learning your life lessons. You know, we all understand that, you know, times just were completely different then. But yeah, you're right. Why has this not been denounced?
What made it particularly inexcusable for me was that he apparently used some special kind of paint or product or whatever to ensure that it didn't wash off whilst he was sweating during the match, because that could have given at least the commentary team something of an out of, look how ridiculous this thing that he did is. It's going away. And that just shows what an awful thing it is to do, etc. and so on. But they were that insistent on it that they made sure that it didn't.
That's such a Roddy Piper thing. Well, only Roddy Piper in 1990 would think, I better take extra attention to use the correct paint. Which makes that stands Roddy Piper out as he is a perfectionist and he very much cares about his craft. He also does some just deplorable things and thinks it's okay because it's wrestling. It's not really him.
But didn't Gorilla Monsoon reportedly... in the back, replace the cleaner with just water. So he had to go to the airport the next day, still half black.
Yeah, that's walking funny. Through the airport in Canada with a large Mickey Mouse doll for his daughter, still half in blackface, which must have attracted some looks. Bad News Brown's not somebody we've mentioned. Does anybody know anything about him, or would you like to learn?
Yes, he is he's an Olympic bronze medalist, so he's not quite Kurt Angle, but... Not quite Kurt Angle.
He's Ronda Rousey.
He's Ronda Rousey.
Bronze in judo bronze in 1976.
Yeah.
It's good to see we saw all those judo moves in this match, didn't we? The kind of that paid off.
He has distractingly high trunks. There's just something about his trunks that look as if they're missing like an extra bit of fabric around the back. So I can see like the bottom of his bum.
So maybe that's where Simon Cowell got that gimmick from.
Maybe. Who knows?
He left the Fed after SummerSlam this year, saying that Vince had reneged on a promise to make him the first black champ. He died age 53 of a heart attack, which we're sort of getting used to. On from that, I think we're probably best to just put it behind us, to Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire, brackets with Miss Elizabeth, defeating Queen Sherry and Randy Savage. Carrie, this is our first in-ring look at Dusty Rhodes, one of the most historically significant figures in past, present and maybe future WWE history. Some people won't know much about him. Tell us.
Okay, let's work backwards, I suppose. So he's the father of Cody Rhodes and Goldust. He's probably most famous in the past kind of 10 years for his work in WWE development. So one of the key figures behind NXT, hence the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Tournament. And then before that, obviously famous for his own in-ring work, and he's also his promos. I mean, the Hard Times promo is one of the most famous wrestling promos of all time. I don't think we need to go over that. But if you haven't seen it, go and watch it on YouTube immediately. It's one of those compelling pieces of acting you will see from a wrestler.
And one of his main duties in the Performance Center was promo classes, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Which is interesting because I kind of feel in the past couple of years that's been slightly neglected, that they've kind of gone on this talent search of all the indies and gotten these brilliant in-ring performers who aren't necessarily the most comfortable on camera. They're not necessarily so hot on the character work or the actual talking side of it. And yeah, I think that's probably where Dusty is most currently missed in WWE product.
In terms of his in-ring career, Kyle, it was more Crockett Promotions, WCW, than WWF. He's decked out in polka dots here. Supposedly that was not a rib on him, but he was a serious performer for the rest of his career, and he was kind of made to be slightly comical during his WWF run.
Yeah, so he's NWA Crockett, babyface du jour. He frequently clashed with Ric Flair. So the idea was Ric Flair, as the heel, would hold the title for a long, long, long time. Dusty Rhodes would chase, eventually overcome, or try and overcome. There'd be shenanigans, the Four Horsemen would get involved, or you'd get what is termed as a dusty finish, which is Dusty Rhodes invented a dusty finish, which is a finish which isn't clean. So if your face wins, but it's via DQ, so the heel retains the title, or other shenanigans. The way I always described it to my non-wrestling friends is in the Oscars where everyone thought La La Land won and then eventually became Moonlight, that's a dusty finish.
Yeah, it's like when the ref changes the result
sometime
afterwards, basically.
Moonlight has won. That's a dusty finish, but in the Oscars. And then he goes over to WWE due to, business reasons. He wasn't a great booker in the same way he was a fantastic wrestler, because he, like many other wrestlers turned bookers, didn't want to give up the title. Gets to WWE, and they thought, all right, well, you're like this great heroic common man hero. We're going to just take the mick out of you. So put him in yellow polka dots. But the thing about Dusty Rhodes is he's so charismatic and he's so funny and he can make nearly every gimmick sing that it worked.
And one of the biggest ribs that Vince liked to play on him was the fact that the character Virgil is actually named after Dusty Rhodes' real name. So kind of a valet, a dog's body, a bit of a joke. And that's how Virgil got his name.
As is Akeem the American Dream. Akeem the African Dream. There are two black characters in WWE who are a bizarre piss take of Dusty Rhodes, because of the fact that Dusty Rhodes comes from the South and speaks like this, which apparently to Vince is how black people shuck and jive. Great man, isn't he?
Axel, Dusty...
Sorry, still gets me.
In terms of his sons, Dustin, a.k.a. Goldust, looks more like him. Cody maybe sort of thinks more like him, you know, the kind of entrepreneurial, independent businessman that we've seen, particularly in this year of 2018, would that be fair to say?
Oh, completely. Yeah, I mean, Dusty understood what wrestling fans wanted and how to almost modernise the product within the territories and draw a crowd and make the crowd go home shocked and surprised and enthralled. And they come back. So they come back next week or come back next time you're on tour. And you see Cody doing that now with the indie setup. He's offering something different. He's offering something cool. He understands what wrestling is in 2018, like Dusty did in the 80s. So I think, yeah, I think you can clearly see the lineage. And the thing I liked about the promo before this match, because Sapphire isn't an in-ring competitor.
She was basically a fan who worked her way into the storyline. Real name Juanita Wright. Sherry didn't like working with her, apparently.
But Dusty does all he can in the promo to physically bring her in, and then while in the ring, he clearly has taken this person under his wing to try to create the best match, to try to make the most out of her experience in it. And from anyone you speak to that's been in NXT while Dusty was there, one of the first people they'll talk about, it's not Triple H, it's not, you know, it's not Matt Bloom, it's not, you know, the women's division usually talk about Sarah Marta, but it's Dusty. Dusty's the guy they'll talk about, the one guy that they're instantly connected with, because there's clearly something about him as a human being that just loved working with people and making the most out of them. And his enthusiasm for sports entertainment clearly came across and was contagious. And I think that can even be seen in the slight promo you see before this match.
In terms of the people opposing them here, Sherry, somebody we've spoken about, anybody have a preference for heel Savage over face Savage? Carl, you're shaking your head. Yes, that surprises me.
I like me some heel Macho Man, because we'll get into this a bit later when we talk about face one. Macho Man is better, more interesting to me when he's incredibly dominant. So unlike, to loop back to what I said about Warrior, Macho Man's a great actor, but he's got quite a pronounced vocabulary. So obviously this is a podcast, so you can't see what I'm doing right now, but Macho Man does this a lot, where he puts both of his arms out and then he points like this, which is basically his version of going, "Hello, new paragraph."
I feel like we need car gifts to accompany the podcast.
Yes. So stick both your arms out and then point forwards, and then like very, very specifically. That's how Macho Man starts next segment of match. And he does that a lot more when he's a good guy than he does as a bad guy, because when he's a bad guy, he's getting tables and he's punching you more and he's just trying to beat you up a lot more than he is trying to tell a story and being quite clean. And also, I find Sensational Sherry just fascinating when she's beside Macho Man, or when she's beside Shawn Michaels, or when she's doing anything, really. So yeah, I prefer heel Macho Man.
And I've also, with his delivery, because it's so deep and because it's so pronounced, and I kind of feel like it suits a heel character more. I can't get behind a hero sort of saying, "Ooh, yeah." That doesn't sound like a hero to me.
That's the worst Macho Man impression I've ever heard.
It was, you know, maybe it was him on the loo or something. I don't know, but
he's back.
I don't say heroes don't talk like that. I can't get behind someone. He could say the most prophetic, wonderful thing, and I would just go, "Well, that's ridiculous," because it's coming out of his mouth. We'll say something dastardly that way. Don't say something wonderful, because I won't believe it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Parts Unknown. Have you given us a 5-star rating and or review? If so, thanks. If not, we'd be terribly grateful. Back to WrestleMania 6 then. A big old card as the Fed tried to give everybody a WrestleMania moment. Also in action in Toronto were Earthquake beating Hercules, Rick Rude beating Jimmy Snuka, the Hart Foundation beating the Bolsheviks in a 19-second classic, the Barbarian going over against Tito Santana, Dino Bravo doing the job to Jim Duggan, and the Big Boss Man defeating Akeem. The next match I want to discuss is once again all about the Jake Roberts promo. Producer Ben, hit it.
Well, well, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Here we are at WrestleMania, and it's the biggest match of your career. Why? Because everything you stand for is on the line, namely the Million Dollar Belt. Oh, yeah, it can be yours once again. You see, all you have to do to get it back is go through Damien and me. But you see, Damien and I don't forget. We remember all the times you made people grovel for your money.
These were people far less fortunate than you. People who could use your money for essentials. And what did you do? You made fun of them. You humbled them. And you humiliated them. Well, now it's my turn. I'm going to make you beg, DiBiase. You are going to get down on your hands and knees. This time, you'll be the one that's humbled. This time, you'll be the one that's humiliated. And this time, you will be the one that grovels for the money. And how appropriate that the money you grovel for is your very own. A victim of your own greed, wallowing in the muck of avarice.
Longfellow couldn't have said it better.
Carrie, there's a reason that Barry Blostein chose to include that in Beyond the Mat, isn't there? Because it's one of those things that you kind of, people who don't get wrestling, that might be the sort of thing you'd show them and go, hey, it's this kind of thing.
I've talked about this before and the difference of the wrestlers who worked in the 80s coming up through kind of smaller shows and being able to act and use their voice and just listening to that without actually watching it. Shows how good Jake the Snake was at that. It's the difference in volume, it's difference in pacing. It's just amazing. I'm just sitting here with all kind of heart eyes. It's just amazing.
So that's the promo. We've spoken a lot, Anton, about Jake's promos in the last couple of weeks while you were in Saskatoon.
I was in a novelty battle royal.
Yeah. The match itself wasn't very good, I didn't think. Another count-out finish. Were they protecting them both, or did neither man want to lose to the other?
Well, the fact there was a Mexican wave as well. I mean, that's just cruel. After such a wonderful promo, to have that a couple of minutes into the match. It was weird because I was watching the match thinking, oh, I expected more. Because both these guys are actually sort of great in the ring for their time as well. And it felt like Gorilla Monsoon was really trying to sell it with a lot of bread baskets and a lot of beauties. And the commentary didn't match what was going on in the ring, sadly. I think it was because this feud continued as well. I think it was more of just a bridge match to keep it going more than anything else, which is a real shame because these guys, you know, were great and they deserved a... This should have been a match you walk away from. I could have saved the bill if this was given the time and the development it needed. And Roberts kind of reminds me a little bit of... There's a little bit of Ambrose, I know we kind of talked about it before, Dean Ambrose, but just the way that the crowd is shouting DDT throughout the whole thing, especially towards the end as well. And obviously we get that now with Dirty Deeds whenever Dean's in the ring. That's pretty much the only similarity I'm going to say because Roberts is far better than Ambrose. But I liked it. I liked Roberts, basically, and I liked Ted DiBiase. It's just a shame this match was just forgettable.
I disagree. I thought this was a great, smooth match, great chemistry. I've talked about hair degrading during matches, and DiBiase's got a great one with his like finely coiffed rich man mullet that gets sweaty, and DiBiase's got this great thing where he's wrestling someone where it's just rich person, this thing, just get off me, you gross underclass, which I really like. I watched this with my two wrestling friends, Tarquin and Cordelia, and Tarquin pointed out that you've mentioned this before, Axel, about how WrestleMania matches of this age don't have proper endings. Mm-hmm. To which Tarquin said, well, yeah, there's no Raw, there's no SmackDown. You get maybe 5 or 6 pay-per-views a year. There's just a lot less TV time to fill. So therefore, you don't have the need to just churn up and just go through loads and loads and loads and loads of storylines. So yeah, in this era, you have loads more count-out finishes and loads more whatnot because you have to get your feud to last a year rather than have your feud last 3 months like you have in modern day.
Yeah, and they'd settle things in house shows.
Yeah.
Then as well. So you knew if they were coming to your town and it was unresolved, you could go and watch them potentially resolve their issues. So yeah, I completely understand, but there is a lack of production in a lot of these matches where you just go, if I was involved in that match and it finished in such a haphazard way, I'd be disappointed as a wrestler/performer.
I think what confused me most about the production of this particular segment is because the $1 million belt is unsanctioned. So make the match a kind of more unsanctioned. You've got a referee in there. You've got a WrestleMania. So in what way is it unsanctioned? Just because it's not... It's basically, you mean it's not one of the main belts. They could have done something interesting with that, I think. But I don't know what.
Back to the pre-match. I wanted at this point, Carrie, for us to throw some love the way of Gene Okerlund. Because in these batch of WrestleManias, there's not many hype vids. There's not many other stuff. They're all set up by interviews backstage with him, presumably, in most cases recorded before the event happens. The best compliment you can give him is that you don't really notice him in a way, but he's so smooth and seamless, a really key part of company history, and not just WWF, WCW as well.
No, I think he's actually one of the most important figures in treating these WrestleManias as a really big event. So when you see backstage segments now, you get your kind of on-camera interviewers quite often gurning at the camera, and they're kind of reacting directly to the audience. He doesn't do that. He treats it very straight, as if he's like a proper journalist. He's asking the questions. He's there as a kind of intermediary, but he's not a character in himself. He does talk to the camera when he's introducing things, but he's not there to necessarily forward a storyline as an actor in it.
And he's reactive, and he can do playful things. Like I think it's in WrestleMania 5 where he interviews Brutus Beefcake, and he just starts with a subtle look down and goes, "What a package!" Just to try and throw Beefcake off, and still going strong as well, isn't he? God bless him. Right, before the main event, we had a rhythm and blues concert, that being Greg Valentine, Honky Tonk Man, Jimmy Hart and some women singing their classic hit, Honka 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 Burning Love. Anyone spot who drove them to the ring in their own pink Cadillac?
It's me, it's DDP.
Yeah.
So unbelievable.
Apparently he drove from Florida, where he lived, to Toronto in his pink Cadillac to be part of the show. That's the best thing we can say about Honka 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 Burning Love.
I sent you guys a message, didn't I, after I watched it? I feel like I've got ear gonorrhea or something. I don't know what's happened to me. It's horrible. It was awful. I mean, Honky Tonk is... I know everybody has those characters. I know you can't stand Beefcake, for example, Matt. Honky Tonk's that guy for me. I cannot stand him. I see him on screen and it just makes me angry. Because Elvis is dead for like 12, 13 years by this point, and we've still got an Elvis impersonator, and he's rubbish in the ring, and it's just so bad. Like, even then, people didn't like, even people then knew he was rubbish in an age of rubbish wrestlers. So, and he always gets good billing in all these WrestleManias. It's just terrible.
Because Vince thinks it's funny. Because Vince. Yeah, I don't know what offends me more, his lack of ability in the ring or his lack of musical ability. This is just terrible, and my entire comments for the match is why the performance is so bad. I don't know whether they couldn't hear the track. I don't know. It was just really awful. All of it was dreadful.
Then the Bushwhackers come in, and don't get me started on that. So...
we'll be talking about them in a couple of weeks' time. The next match we want to chat about is Rick Martel beating Coco Beware. This is the bout that kicked off the show. We've spoken about Martel a fair bit of late, and we will do more in the weeks to come. Coco, Carl, features in Beyond the Mat as a kind of washed-up veteran, and he's often derided for being in the Hall of Fame. You know, when you talk about people who are in the Hall of Fame, people go, "Oh, Coco Beware's in it." That's a bit harsh, isn't it? He had a beautiful dropkick. He was a decent performer. Maybe if he'd been a bit taller, he would have had a better run. But I think it's kind of the fact that he's got a parrot with him kind of undercuts him a bit.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. One thing I wrote down in my notes for this match is, wow, Rick Martel is noticeably bigger in 1990 than he is in...
No wellness policy at this time.
No. Obviously, so 90... WrestleMania 7 that we talked about was during the height of the steroids trial. So everyone is just a couple of shoulders smaller. Whereas here they're not. Everyone's huge, bursting at the seams, really. But this match is quite nice. It's just two steady mid-carders going about in a nice little warm-up match. Coco Beware is great. And if I could rent a parrot, I'd dress up as him for Halloween.
It's everything for me that...
I hope you can't rent a parrot. I mean,
yeah, that's a weird thing. Yeah,
they have it.
It's everything that sort of... It starts off with loads of energy, and then just for some reason it's like, oh, actually, we've got to fill 10 minutes, so it just slows down. And I'd never understand why, when they've got a card full of so many matches, why they couldn't just say, right, here's five, just do it in 5 minutes. Just what you did in the first 3 minutes, continue that for a couple more and done, you're out. So you don't worry about getting gassed. Don't worry about, filling the running order. Just go and do it. And this match, again, starts really well. You get great. WrestleMania's actually going to be a lot of good. And then there's a lot of bear hugs and a lot of panting around. It's like, oh, come on, guys. Come on. You're better. You show me you're better than this. Obviously, I haven't been here when you talked about Rick Martel, but why is he coming to the ring with some sort of vaginal douche spray? I don't understand what's going on there.
It's arrogance.
It's arrogance.
Which is a great name for an aftershave, for a perfume, which is wonderful, but it just looks weird, doesn't it? It's too big. It's too... There's something almost medical about it.
And stop doing the action. Don't
yeah, exactly.
Doc, have you got anything to say on this match?
Not really. I think it's quite interesting, some of the commentary in this. And they say things like, you can't just cover Martel and not expect him to kick out. I was like, well, no. Okay. I don't know whether they were also warming up at this point, perhaps. Perhaps that was it.
Gorilla Monsoon is a company legend, obviously. I am really finding myself not liking his commentary. Everything's in the kisser or the breadbasket.
Yeah, you notice that particularly as you kind of go through. He has a series of stock phrases that he falls back on. So the kind of first 20 minutes of a WrestleMania, you're fine. Then it's kind of like, yeah, you said that. Yeah, you said that. Yeah, you say he's a legend. There's a certain amount of nostalgia you can get away with, I think, at this point.
Gorilla's fine because he is the straight man. So you can tell a lot about a wrestling fan as to whether they prefer Gorilla and Bobby the Brain or if they prefer Gorilla and Jesse. Because, like, do you like your yucking and joking and also kind of, hey, look, Bobby's going to just call this out for being terrible? Or do you like it played a lot more straight with Jesse being a young man to Gorilla's old man, if that makes sense?
Is Jesse not just trying to get himself over all the time? I find him quite irritating as well.
He is trying to do that, but I think one of the good things about Gorilla Monsoon is whether he's with Heenan or with Ventura, is he doesn't try and compete with them for kind of quickness of wit or, you know, cleverness with words. He'll just kind of let them get on with it and then get back to calling the action. I think that's a much underrated skill in your commentator.
And he's also got the fantastic, will you stop?
I'm with Matt, though.
Which is how I tell my friends to stop misbehaving. And people in the pub, if they're just being loud and, like, grunts, just, will you stop?
I'm with Matt, though. I expected more from Gorilla, and I actually sort of find myself quite disappointed with some of the commentary. And actually, weirdly, because we're in a time where babyfaces, everything they did was, you know, like Hulk, he would do horrible things, but so Gorilla's job was to justify everything a babyface did. So then you'd watch it, and Jesse would say, actually, that's wrong. You go, yeah, that is wrong. Well, like, so it's weird watching it now, because at the time, Gorilla would have been the voice of the people, you know, when it came to the babyface's characters and their actions. But actually, watching it now, going, oh, Jesse actually is the more modern voice, and Gorilla sounds very, very dated.
There is a bit in the Dusty Rhodes match where Jesse is more or less saying intergender matches should be a thing, and Gorilla's a bit, like, reluctant to do it. Which, again, I played up to just, like, the age gap between them. There's a lot more subtext in the comedy between Gorilla and Jesse, which is just... Gorilla's just a bit older and long in the tooth, where it's just like, no, it's a new age. Look at what's going on. Look, Jake the Snake wants to take Million Dollar Man's money and bring luxury communism to everyone. And Gorilla's just a bit like, yeah, well, he's got a snake, though, hasn't he?
In terms of the tag match, the belts changed hands. Demolition becoming three-time champs as they beat the Colossal Connection, Andre the Giant and Haku, with Bobby Heenan. Carly must have enjoyed the classic cocaine promo that preceded this from Demolition.
Demolition are terrible, aren't they?
They are one ball gag away from a middle-aged swingers party in a Kent Scout hut, aren't they? They are.
I said Sex Dungeon, so yeah, close.
I mean, they are, wow. I mean, and also the fact that one of them looks like Jerry Lawler makes me laugh as well, because I can imagine, oh, yeah, he's clearly been in one of those suits.
The finish, really sad, Carrie, at the end. Heenan turns on Andre, and Andre's so broken down at this point, he kind of misses with the paintbrush hand slap that he goes to give Heenan with. Heenan, ever the pro, doesn't sell it, and he does it again. But it's obvious that, you know, Haku's done basically all the work in this match. They get Andre tied up in the rope, so he doesn't have to do much. It sort of makes you think he shouldn't actually have been out there at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I noted at this point that he's climbing in kind of through as low an angle as possible, so not like most big men would do. He probably just couldn't do it at this point, God love him. And yeah, not the most mobile of matches. He doesn't do much work in the ring, gets caught in the ropes in truly unconvincing fashion. Then obviously Heenan turns on him, giving Andre a complete bollocking. And yeah, it is a sad sight at this point.
It's sad, but at least Andre gets a moment where he's, you know, the good guy again at the end. Mm. It's not, you know, this is what he was for the vast majority of his wrestling career. And he sticks it to Bobby Heenan, one of the greatest heel characters, certainly the greatest heel character, in my opinion, of that generation. So at least there's a sort of story sort of finish to his career, even if physically he couldn't do it. And I don't know whether it's me looking at it as I want to see it, but you could see in the pre-match promo, Andre's smiling. Like, he wants to be there. Like, regardless of what's going on with his body, regardless of the a horribly sad story of the end of his life, he cared so much about these events. Like, he was such a big factor in these events being as big as they were. Him being there clearly meant a lot to him. So if he wanted to be there, damn right he should have been there.
Carl Haku was not somebody who I was particularly familiar with. He was a flipping good worker by this standard, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Moving around the ring like nobody's business.
Amazing strong hand. Barefoot wrestlers give me the heebie-jeebies because I'm always going, oh, God, don't do your ankle. But he does not do his ankle. He wrestles fantastic in what's basically a handicap match. I don't like Demolition. I've always thought they were a rubbish Legion of Doom clone. The fact that they had the tag team record for a phenomenal amount of time until the New Day took it made me annoyed, and then when New Day took it I was very, very happy. I really enjoyed this match, and you know, I really enjoy the Heenan family and that concept of that at any point in time there could be a match and Bobby Heenan would be there and Heenan would just do shenanigans.
Yeah, if it was Jimmy Hart turning up every two or three matches, you go a bit crazy, wouldn't you? But because Heenan was so good and brought the most out of each character that he was, you know, that he was sort of representing. And so it was, yeah, it was just wonderful.
Carl's favourite wrestler, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, defeated Mr. Perfect, who had the genius alongside him. Apparently this was Perfect's first loss. Not good, as the person who is going to be hosting the next two WrestleManias might say.
Oh, I hate Brutus the Barber. My notes read, Brutus sucks so effing much. I hate him. His stupid tights make him look near naked. Get him out. It's a really catchy opening theme song, though.
I love his entrance music. Bam, 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 bam.
Can we talk about how dangerous Brutus' gimmick is, please? Because he's walking around with shit. He looks like a murderer. Especially when he delivers a promo and his eyes are bulging. You're like, is he the good guy?
Doesn't work either, does it? Because barbers don't carry 8-foot shears.
No.
Oh, my goodness. So I literally thought, watching everything before that, I was thinking, well, obviously, Brutus the Barber Beefcake must be a heel. And I thought, no, he's getting a babyface reaction. Why? Because he's got scissors?
Because he's friends with Hulk Hogan. That's
well,
it.
Exactly. That's exactly it, isn't
that's
it?
That's the only reason he's anywhere in this federation. I can't stand it.
But then his gimmick is basically hair raping someone at the end of a match.
Yes.
And it's just... is that okay?
That's what babyfaces do. They steal scissors back from people, drag people who are unconscious into the ring and cut their hair off.
Weird. I also like the fact that Genius, clearly, Larry Poff is clearly not happy about what's going on, and you can see he is not happy with the end of this match and his hair getting cut in the middle of the ring.
So we talk a lot about nepotism in wrestling, and Carl's mentioned there that Beefcake is a Hogan associate. Carrie, who was the genius, I would suggest there's a bit of nepotism as to why he's involved at this point.
He's Randy Savage's brother. And yes, the genius is a gimmick that was kind of later taken on, or the mantle was passed on to Damian Sandow in NXT and then on the main roster. Yeah, I quite like this character. I thought Lanny Poffo was all right, but yeah, this is fairly abysmal in general.
It's a shame to see Perfect streak end with a slingshot.
Yeah.
That was the move that won the match for Brutus as well. I was like, really? You built this guy up for so long. And then he loses his streak in that manner. Just a bit of a surprise, really.
After Brutus has been hit by the scroll as well. I thought after the scroll and Perfect waves it off, I'm like, yeah, this is it. This is the end. No, Brutus beefcakes his way out of there. Brilliant.
The last match we'll talk about, the Orient Express, who are Pat Tanaka and Sato with Mr. Fuji, defeated the Rockers. You know who they are, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels, by count out. The Rockers apparently out of favour at this time because of their behind-the-scenes or away-from-the-ring shenanigans. It's that kind of thing we've been talking about, Carl, where Sean sort of got away with it and Marty didn't.
Yep, it's the story of everything in like heavily male-influenced workplaces. If you're good at what you can do, you can drink and turn up to work hungover, apparently. This match was pretty dull, and I wrote down it's a stacked tag division and they have no idea how to make any matches have any consequence. Oh wait, it's just like 2018. Hooray.
Yeah. Vince McMahon doesn't like tag wrestling is the thing that we hear all the time, isn't it?
Yes. Eric Bischoff didn't like it either, and he specifically pointed out the Rockers, because he said any time a tag team gets anywhere, any bit of heat, it's because one person is very clearly better than the other one, which I disagree with. I've always been of the Triple H NWA style of you can have amazing tag teams, because the whole joy of tag teams is when they start teaming up and doing moves together, which is why I like the Bar, which is why I like the Revival, which is why LOD were so huge. You can't say tag team wrestling is rubbish when LOD apparently have the greatest pop of all time.
New Day.
Yeah. Just get two people who are on the same wavelength doing a big suplex and watch everyone start screaming.
Freebirds, yeah, you could go on. Mr. Fuji, carry, he got about a bit, didn't he?
yes, he did. Yeah, we'll talk about Mr. Fuji quite a lot in the next few weeks as well. But yeah, it's interesting because obviously usually managers get put with teams that don't cut promos. And yet Mr. Fuji's character at this point seems to be, let's mock him because he doesn't speak English as a first language. It's a really... This is probably really uncomfortable for me as well. One of the most uncomfortable, possibly even more uncomfortable than the Roddy Piper thing. This goes along all the time, and it's really insidious rather than as blatant as the Roddy Piper thing.
That's interesting you say that, because I've got a note saying, is this the least offensive piece of racism, and is that even a thing?
I put a note here saying, oh, Japanese competitors, where's the... Oh, there's the salt.
Something to do with the sun as well. Rising sun, yeah. Anything yeah. Sun-related to finish. All that good stuff. So overall then, Carrie, what did you think of this WrestleMania, as has become the standard good points, bad points?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. There was a lot of stuff. We didn't mention Mary Tyler Moore. Mary Tyler Moore was there. That was really odd.
She was quite pleased to be there, though, wasn't she?
I think she might have been overexcited. I think she might have been given a free glass of Prosecco or something. Well, but she really enjoyed it.
Not Drake Maverick overexcited.
Anything else that we've missed that you want to talk about, Carl?
I finished this and I thought, if I was Edge, would that show have made me want to become a professional wrestler? And
the end would have, no? As a child, as an 11-year-old, that Hogan Warrior match would have, I think.
And apparently he was there with Christian with many posters. So he had one for Andre, one for Bobby, and then eventually one for Hogan. People got more excited back in 1990 is my only explanation. There are some good bits in there. I really enjoyed Bret Hart, just mean mucking to the camera with the 1, 2, 3. But, yeah, it says a lot that when you talk about WrestleMania 6, it's only the final match rather than anything else. Most WrestleManias, when you talk about when they were good, they have at least the main event and one other match, whereas this one, it's just Hogan and the Jake the Snake promo.
Axe, did you have a WrestleMania moment?
I want to talk, because I completely forgot Earthquake was a thing. So that made me laugh when he popped up, because... He's supposed to be, obviously, this natural disaster, this big... And he just looks like a 400-pound blue hemorrhoid with Friar Tuck hair. Because he's wearing this sort of bright blue sort of spandex. And the commentary's like, oh, he sent 28 men to hospital. And you're thinking, well, he's terrible in the ring. So I presume, what, his last batch of dodgy mints at his chili cook-off was terrible. Because there is no way this guy's hurting anyone. And his
finisher... Did you not think he could move quite well for a big guy?
His finisher...
I think you're being a bit harsh on
his finisher.
John
is terrible. His finisher is... It's kind of a weird leg drop where he runs off the ropes. But he does it with sort of such glee. And there is a bit of pace about it. But it reminds me of when you see like a four-year-old splashing in puddles. It's always all uncoordinated and it doesn't quite land as it's supposed to.
You've got 3 weeks of analogies saved up from here.
It's so silly. It's so silly.
It's so funny you say that, because in the pre-match bit, so again, it's Gene who makes this bit, so it's Jimmy Hart with Earthquake talking to Gene, and Gene is just looking at Earthquake when he's talking to Jimmy, because he's trying to tell the story that Earthquake is terrifying, but Earthquake is just bouncing from foot to foot trying to convey intensity. He just looks like he needs a wee.
Did you give us, is that your WrestleMania moment?
No, my WrestleMania moment, other than the Jet Snake promo, is when Steve Allen's in the in the locker room, and there's a piano next to the showers.
Yeah. That's great.
And no one's at that. And that's just like we accept when there's a piano in the shower. Are we, okay, fine. Of course we are.
So Steve Allen was a celebrity involved, and there was a the Bolsheviks who was involved in that.
And he tries. He says, "I'm going to do the Russian, Soviet national anthem now." And obviously, he does about four different versions where he's taking the Mickey. But that wasn't particularly funny. It's just there's a piano in the shower. I don't know why it made me giggle.
Carl,
It's Mary Tyler Moore. In the crowd, they ask her, how are you enjoying WrestleMania? She goes, oh, it's great. It's the best of athletics and theatre. I went, yes, that's what wrestling is. You've completely summed it up for everyone. Thank you.
Gary?
Oh, I'll do something quite boring. I thought Mr. Perfect was amazing. I thought in that Beefcake match, even though it was ultimately terrible, he's bumping all over the place and working so hard. And yeah, I love Mr. Perfect. And he doesn't have that much of a track record at WrestleManias in general, so I'm going to flag it up here because I love him.
Good shout. Mine is the constant references to how next year's show would be in front of over 100,000 people at the Coliseum, because it would not. Gary, where can people keep up with you on Twitter?
At Kerry Sparkle.
Carl.
Anchorman 616.
Anton.
At Sky Anton.
We are at the PU Podcast. I am at Matt Davis Adams. Now, we're shaking things up next week. We're going to cram our WrestleMania 5 and 4 reviews into one show, meaning the Mega Powers Explosion and the WWF title tournament will all happen at the same time. Crikey. Until then, thanks for listening. I've been Matt Davis Adams. You've been in Parts Unknown.
The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.